Trecaster Daily, thank you so much for joining us on NITV Radio today. It's an absolute pleasure to have you here to yarn about a journey between the fires. And I'm going to start by letting Mob know about the first line in the opening scene of the documentary. You say it's been the hardest year of my life, no word of a lie, toughest year of my life.
Yeah, look, it definitely was, and I struggled with a lot of things after losing mum. When you're raised as an only child, and she was a single mother, you realise what she gave you was so important when they leave, and so it took a little bit of time to process that loss too. So part of that process was going out to Halfway Creek, where her old place was, where I grew up, and was just doing a few rounds on the little push mower and just taking it all in, and just feeling like I was back on country and feeling like I was able to let go of certain things. But it took a lot of time.
Did you write all of the songs at that kitchen table before recording them?
I reckon about 80, 90% of the songs are written there, either at the kitchen table inside, or if the light wasn't good enough, I'd go out on the veranda and write on a little table out there. And the song started to flow with each lap of the mower. And, it was going round and round. I'd just start to process a few songs, and then I'd make my way back to the guitar and have a cup of tea in the afternoon and be sitting there looking at that beautiful lawn. And then I'd start, thinking about how I felt, and then start channeling that into some writing. And it was really, really important to, I think, get that decision too, sitting on the veranda saying that, oh, look, if I've written most of the songs here, maybe there's a chance I can record them here too, which I thought was a bit of a long shot, to be honest. I thought there's no way they're going to be able to use an old bush home in the middle of, Halfway Creek to make a record. But I rang two friends and they went, oh, we can do that. Don't you worry. We've got all the gear we need. Technology's on our side. And one fella, Jordan Power, said, the beautiful part about this record is it will only sound like your mum's house.
And like you just said there, how are you going to record in this bush home? How did you record? What setup was there?
Look, like I had to move a lot of things around, as I mentioned in the documentary too. It was very hard for me moving all the stuff around in mum's kitchen. But they set up the kitchen as a bit of a control room with some speakers and a big computer screen. And then they ran all the wires out to the different rooms of my youth, The guitar player was out near the shower. I was out in mum's art room where she used to paint. And that's where I had my little setup there. And in the living room, in my lounge room, where I learned to be a musician. There was a big set of drums, a steel guitar, and a bass player, and they were all standing around in my lounge room near the record player. And it was just such an experience to see. I know the technology was pretty advanced to be able to make a record there, but it was just the fact that I was actually in my childhood home where I learned to play guitar and learned to play music with Merle Haggard on the stereo, and I was creating music again in that lounge room.
Were you overwhelmed with emotion while recording? What
Look,
was it like?
I'm not going to lie. We're a pretty sooky mob up here. When we get together with family, there's a few tears at different times. I mean, even just this weekend, we've had a funeral of a first cousin, and I've been to a wedding as well on the same weekend. That doesn't happen very often, but yeah, it was an emotional experience sitting there in the house when we struck the first chord. I think it was only when that little silk screen that mum used to use to make little t-shirts fell down the back off the curtain rail and right on my shoulder, as if to say, just remember where you are. And also, I think mum would have been saying, why are all these people in our house? And it was just a little sign, I think, from mum to say, she's there. And it made me feel really comfortable. And I told all the boys and the girls involved in the whole making of this thing, I said, just feel like yourself. Don't feel like you have to be anyone else, Kerry, just relax and enjoy the experience of making some music. And that first week when we did all the band tracks was one of the best weeks of recording I think I'll ever do. I don't think I'll ever beat that.
What was the energy, the vibe like when you were recording it? You just described some of it there for us, but what was it actually like? The
Look,
spirit, the soul of the place.
it was just a little hotbed of creativity. It felt like cooking up a big feed. You know when someone's got something on like a curry? My auntie makes an amazing bully beef curry, and when you smell that coming through the house, there's just something really, really warming and familiar about it. It had this familiarity in the old house. And even through the week, when the whole band had gone and there was only all the crew there with me, I would cook up a few feeds that Mum would cook as well. And it just felt amazing. There was electricity in the air. And then you'd walk out on the veranda and get ready to talk through the next song. And to me, it was a dream come true. I never thought it would be possible because I'm a little bit old school. I always thought, oh, well, I better hire a studio or maybe go to Nashville and record with some players there. But I handpicked the players to come out who I knew would get this project. And there was something in the air, Kerry. There was something in the air that I think created this record with us. It wasn't just us.
Sounds like black magic to me in
Oh,
our
yeah.
mob's way, in the best possible
Yeah.
way. Sounds very magical. Tell me, what were those feeds that you cooked that your mum would cook? What did
Yeah,
you
well,
feed
look,
the band?
they're all a bit scared of bully beef, right? So, and I said, let me allay your fears, and I'm going to cook up Mum's baked macaroni that she made out of bully beef. And so, as I started cooking it up, she always started with onion and garlic, and I think she sort of stole half of her recipe from my Maltese grandmother, right? So she's taken that, but my Maltese grandmother might have used a bit of corned meat and a bit of pork mince or something, but Mum just went straight up two tins of bully beef. And as you're cooking up the onion and garlic and waiting for it to simmer down, you always throw in a little bit of Keane's curry and a little bit of mixed spice. That must have come from the Maltese side too. And as that was cooking, it sort of felt like the whole crew were all just coming to the kitchen for a look, sticky beaking, as to what was going on. And it was just the most beautiful smell, Kerry. It was like Mum was there, but it helped with the whole healing process for me, cooking up a dish like that. And even some of the people that had never eaten corned meat before, they laid their ears back to it and thought it was one of the best things they'd ever tasted. And so it was lovely doing that. Cooking up different things. Everyone had a hand in helping out. Even our director, Belinda Miller, cooked a meal one night. Everyone had a hand in. And so it was just wonderful experience for all of us. And everyone that came away, Kerry, they all reckon they left a little bit of themselves at the fire, which was lovely to hear.
And speaking about fire, in the documentary, you talk about the fact that you do give everyone a smoke before they head into your home. Why is that important for you, Troy?
Well, all the time that I was down there doing my healing, I sort of lit my fire and the smoke bellowed through the house. And it was a cleanse anyway. But we used to always smoke people, especially strangers who came to visit us and stuff like that. For an occasion like making a record, you want to make sure that everyone feels welcome. So we gave everyone a good smoking at the beginning of the whole process, and they all took a bit on. They all felt like they'd relaxed. And that smoke made its way through. Every morning, you'll see in the documentary, I go up chopping a little bit of hardwood off old stumps and things just to keep that fire going. That was my job in the morning because the coals are always ready to kick off, like when you're camping. So you throw a little bit on, it starts it up again. And it was a cleanse for everyone. And I felt really honored to not only be able to make the record there, but also to have that crew there with me and share the experience. So I don't think I'll ever forget it, Kerry. I think it's something that it was a big part of my healing journey. And I still have good and bad days every now and then. But I think so many people got in touch after seeing it on NITV and said, oh, look, I was looking for the words to find how I missed my loved ones. And I think I found a few of them in this documentary.
And that's a beautiful thing indeed. Tell us about some of the songs featured on this album and that you recorded in your childhood home.
Yeah, look, I think the first song that I had written on my first trip down was Between the Fires. I was living between two fires, my fire at Halfway Creek and my fire at my little family up in Brisbane with my wife and kids. And so they needed to give me the space that I needed, I suppose, to heal properly with that sorry business that was on me. And so that was the first song. And I remember doing a demo when I went back up to Brisbane. And each time I'd come down, I'd open the gate and I'd swing that door open of the car and I would hear that song, Between the Fires. And I would always resonate with the lyric. And it made me feel like I was starting a project, I think. I normally don't know when a project has started. It just organically starts. But I think the first night, it was pitch black out at Mum's place, hardly any light. All you see is the stars. And I remember hearing that song come out of the car thinking, yeah, I think this is a special one. End up being the title track.
What's it like to write about grief with your songs? Is it a difficult thing? Is it healing? I'm imagining it's a healing process. Does it open wounds as well?
It is really difficult to write about, but then it is easier as you get halfway through the project. And I can't really call it a project because it just felt like it was just it was always going to be a journey. Like it says, journey between the fires is what it was. And grief is a journey too. And it was hard writing the last song. On the documentary, you'll see me sitting in the kitchen struggling to finish the song, struggling to even start it, to be honest, Kerry. Moving on was really about going through mum's things. And I think everyone, even people that have lost their wives or husbands, have related to some of the lines in that song. And but it was probably the toughest one to record. It was the last one. It was in mum's kitchen. And you'll hear the struggles that I had on the veranda at times with certain songs. Like I said, don't be surprised if there's a bit of crying, because I am a bit of a sook. And it was the way out for me. I've always found music a great way to rehabilitate yourself on your way through. Even when I was a kid, if I was lonely, I'd listen to songs and that got me through. Slim Dusty, Merle Haggard, George Jones, some of them old sad songs that we still play around the fire today when we're having a jam with family. They got me through. And I just think, I look at the other end of this whole journey between the fires now too, and I think to myself, I'm so glad I did it. I feel 100% better. And it gave me a real spring in my step to be able to walk away and go, well, that was something I needed to do. And everyone felt the same when they walked away and closed the door. A lot of them didn't want to leave straight away. They said, can we just hang for another day or so? And Belinda Miller had her little tent set up. It was like the Taj Mahal out there. And she said, it's almost a shame to take it down because she loved being on that country and the peace that she felt out there while she directed everyone around. And I must say, having her and the crew there, I never had to do something twice, Kerry. Not often you get a director that can be that understanding as to what you're doing there. They make everything seamless, walk them up to the old scar tree where we took the album cover photo. Everything was done in one take. And I have to say thank you to Ben and all the crew around me for being a little bit sympathetic to the fact that I'm old and grumpy making a record sometimes, and I don't want to be getting too much guidance on what to say, but they were really good to me and let me just express myself in one take. And then they would follow me around with the wheelbarrow while I got wood for the fire. And no one's ever been that relaxed around me. Normally you've got someone there bossing people around, but that never happened. And it was just, it was a testament to Ben and all the camera crew with the two Micks that were there doing such an amazing job. And now being able to share it on NITV, I get a real buzz out of knowing, because my mum watched a lot of NITV too out at Halfway Creek, and she would have loved seeing something like this happen at her house.
Which brings me to my next question. What do you think your mum would think of this whole process, writing songs in the house, recording?
Oh, look, I think she'd be super proud. I think she would have been really proud. She loved country music. I mean, she was my sounding board, educator, everything, with all the vinyl records that she had collected over all these years. Every fortnight on the trains, she'd get her pay. The last little bit of pay went towards a vinyl. And we'd go and pick it up at the local shop here. It might be Nash Villa or Buckley's Music in Grafton. And so I think she would have loved to have that steel guitar in the lounge room. There's something about the sound of it, Kerry, when it started to play with Ollie Thorpe playing the steel. He's a very handy guitar player too, but I think mum would have absolutely loved the sound of that coming through those speakers in the kitchen. Yeah, I think she would have been super proud. Look, I would hope she was proud of the way I dealt with everything as well. I didn't take the grief too well, unfortunately, and I think a lot of us don't. It's a slow process for Koori people where I grew up, always has been. But I do believe that it helped me immensely to make music out of that grief. And mum would have been proud of that too. I hope she would have thought it's a great way to recover. And we've always lent on music. And I would hope she would have been really proud of that.
And what was it like growing up in this beautiful home with your mum at Halfway Creek? What was it like for you and your mum?
Look, growing up there was incredible for me. I moved out there just after I was 10 years old. We'd lost my nan, and I spent the first 10 years of my life with my nan and pop while mum worked on the trains, because she really wanted to try and get us somewhere to live that was permanent, So mum said, I hope you don't mind, but I want to keep working, I want to get on the trains. And I said, yeah, I don't mind. I got nan and pop. But when we lost nan and pop, Everything changed. But as it turned out, Mum's first cousin, Tony Barrett, was selling a place that he was looking to get rid of. And my nan, bless her, before she died, she talked Mum into buying Halfway Creek. And it was an incredible childhood. There was lots of amazing swims down the creek. There was lots of work, though, Kerry. I learned to work when I was very, very young with an axe and a mattock and a shovel. We didn't have tractors and things pulling stumps out. We dug them out by hand. So there was a lot of me left at that property. When I look around that beautiful big clearing now, when I mow it, I remember every stump, bub, that we got out there. And it taught me that nothing comes for free. And our grandparents had beautiful work ethic too. And I think that just drifted into our lives, and it made it into my adult life too. So it was a proud place to grow up. It was on Goombanga country. And I still, the other day, I took my son up and got some witchetty grubs out of the trees that the black cockatoos hadn't stolen from us. There were three stragglers after winter. Normally you might get one or two, but we found three, and we had a little taste of them on the coals as we used to as kids. And so to grow up there was a privilege, Kerry. It was an absolute privilege.
And I'm wondering, how has the farm environment changed over the years? Because, as you know, we're going through climate change. Has the landscape changed around the place that you grew up? Do things look different to how they did when you were younger? Is the creek different?
Yeah, the creek's different. It's not the same. I mean, there's a lot of farming around us too, and a lot of blueberry farms and things, and it's changed the way that our creek operates, I think. But I do notice that when my Uncle Tony and his father, Fred Barrett, would have had the property, they cleared a lot of it for cattle and horses. And I see the photos of me standing there as a little jargon on the track, and all the trees are lower. But now we've left it as a bush block. It's more like a corridor for animals, and it's 90 or 103 acres, but my uncle's place is 10 acres on the side of that. But it's all grown up now. It looks like it's old growth again, and we get all sorts of animals. We get goanna, and we get lots of big kangaroos coming through and laying around there. And so it is a big nature corridor, and I do believe that we get a lot of animals come there to live because it's peaceful and there's no activity farming-wise, you know. So I'm very happy to have it like that. And I hear the birds sing in the morning. Sometimes I'll just record with my phone 1/2 a minute of all their calls. And they're always different. There's a whip bird. There's all these beautiful fryer birds, black cockatoos, all rejoicing in the fact they've got somewhere to live that's not really interrupted too much by what man can do. We've left it as it is. The only thing that really looks man-made is that big clearing around you in case there's a fire. But that lawn is worth mowing when you stand there and you have a cold drink of water and you have a look at the lawn. We've always had that going since I was a little kid, and it's been lovely to be able to maintain that as well. And so, yeah, look, I think it's been nice that it's a corridor for animals, and I want to keep it that way.
Sounds like a real proper sanctuary out there,
Oh,
Trocaster
yeah.
Daily, eh? Sounds lovely. What's next for Trocaster Daily coming up in 2026?
Feeling our way through some gigs. Doing something every month while I do a bit more writing. I reckon there's going to be, while I spend a little bit of time back out there, I'm going to really concentrate on doing a bit of writing. And I want to write some happy songs. That's my goal. I want to cheer people up and know that Uncle's not just all sad. And there's a lot of good things to write about in life, you know. And I come to the stage of my life, excuse me, where you do still have things to say. I think our history, it's still fascinating to me. And as I get to 56 and turn 57 this year, I'm still very, really fascinated by our history, Indigenous and non-Indigenous. So I want to try and bring people together with the stories as well. There's a lot of really good stories out there to talk about. So I think I'm going to do a bit more research, watch a few more Rachel Perkins documentaries. They always inspire me. She inspires me a lot, just like her beautiful father. And I think it's going to be nice to be able to just continue to learn. And as I learn, I'm hoping that I can put a few of those lessons in some songs.
Mr. Troy Cassadaly, our dear brother, thank you so much for joining us on NITV Radio today, eh?
Kerry Lee, lovely to talk to you, bub, and thanks for your time. And like I say, everyone at NITV, have a great new year. Looking forward to what you make.
Thanks so much, eh? We'll catch you next time. Take it easy,
Thanks,
eh?
bub. See ya.
You too. Bye.
Da-da.
Bye.